Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 793. Got a special one for you here, kind of shifting gears. It is full-on fantasy draft season. Yes, it's November, but it is full-on draft season. There's draft and hold season. A lot of people talk the 15s. Well, in this world, everyone knows I like the 12s. So I have someone talking NFBC 50s with me, the 12-team draft and hold. This person plays a ton of them. We're going to get to that, get to the strategy, the success, all the goodies involved there. You can find him on Twitter at Sonics102, found out earlier today. He's out there. But more importantly, his name is Ryan Beck. Ryan, thanks for joining me, man. How you doing?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so thrilled to talk about 50s. It's by far my favorite NFBC draft to do. And so, and we're in an amazing draft right now that is the best draft I've been a part of. So it's excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. It's a blast. Ryan is a part of the Bubba and the Bloom Patreon, so we mix it up in the draft room discussions there. And it's always like he's a tough one to twist the arm if you need someone to jump in a draft. He's a lot like me in that regard. We love to be drafting all the time, but he's much better at I in these 50s streets. So there's strategy involved in these that is why we're gonna pick Ryan's brain here. But before we get to that, Let's get to know you for a second. Let's just kind of slow things down. We'll talk plenty of NFBC in a minute, but the initial question: how long have you been playing fantasy baseball? Like, you don't have the date and time, just a rough idea of how long have you been playing?
Well, definitely prior to 1998, but in 1998, I might be dating myself, but there was this thing called the Baseball Weekly, and there was a thing called the Barnes & Noble. And I went to the local Barnes & Noble to pick up my Baseball Weekly. And there was a handwritten note from someone who said they're looking for an AL and NL only owner. And so I answered the call. And my then girlfriend, now wife, was like, "You're going to be put in this guy's trunk. We're never going to hear from you again. You're just going to go meet some strange person." Anyways, I ended up joining that league, Narlo. Sean Shoppy's the commissioner, still going, but that really sparked me wanting to do more than ESPN, more than we did Stratomatic as kids, a lot of sim games, but playing in the AL and NL only leagues really, I was like, that's what I want to do. So it was really starting 1998 when I really started playing fantasy baseball.
That's awesome, because you went straight to the deep end when you do that, because a lot of people, the only leagues, for those that aren't, like, if you can't understand what that means right out the gate, literally he's just in the player pool of one side. Things get shallow really quickly in those formats, so you have to really grind and make that. Like, how many teams is in that one? If you might have said that, I missed
12.
It, but 12, okay.
I was, 12 team AL and NL, and I was given the roster, and I only kept Nomar out of the whole, like, I passed the test, I guess, and then loved that. And then in 2020, I found a podcast by Batflip Crazy. It was a solo pod he was doing driving home, maybe from the holidays, and he was talking about his draft on this format that I'd never heard of. And so I heard about NFBC through that podcast and have been hooked ever since.
He was driving home from the barf draft that I'm a part of. We draft in San Francisco, because that was the thing he used to always do. Is I'd sit next to him sometimes and he would take notes. And I'm like, "What are you taking notes for?" Because he's a lot smarter than I. So I'm like, kind of curious, what are you doing with this? And he does it. Because he can set him up in his car and record as he drives home. It was like a two and a half hour drive for him. And he would literally go basically take notes on every pick so he could discuss it on his drive home.
Yeah. I don't know how that podcast came across my feed, but, and then that led me to your podcast with Toby, and it led me basically just doing NFBC since 2020, and trying all the formats, but just really loving the 50s.
All right. So that's a good one. Good segue here is what you tried all the formats. That's really interesting to hear. You tried them all and it led you to loving 50s. What is the part about 50s that you like the most?
I love the strategy of the 50s. So I've done the draft, the DCs, the draft champions, which are 15 team draft and holds. I've done main events. I've done the OCs, the online championships. I've done auctions. I love drafting the 50s, and I love the strategy of the 50s, which is a 12 team with 50 players, and you set the 50 players you draft are the 50 players you have for the whole year. And I love that there are always tough decisions to make, I feel like, in 50s, that you have really good outfielders, hopefully, if you've done well and you're healthy, with don't have a lot of injuries. And it's nice. To me, I love the in-game strategy, and I also love the drafts. The drafts really move. And I don't know, I've had some success in the 150s. I finished middle of the pack in the main events of 3 years I've done it, but I came across, somebody shared with me the results from the NFBC 50s, and I didn't realize played more 50s than most people. I didn't really know, and that I had some modicum of success. And so I've really just started focusing on them. And it's a great group of drafters, especially this early in the season. You see the same people, the same names in the drafts. And so it's just, I really like the community.
It is. And to your point, especially early on, it's the thing that like Ben and I all talk about, Ryan and I, when we're kind of analyzing early ADP and stuff, and you wonder like, wow, they actually caught up to these, like you wouldn't expect the guy to be so high so early type deal. And then you realize, okay, if you're drafted in October and November, you probably have a little handle on what's going on compared to just the average Joe jumping in say February or March to get a few baseball drafts. So it's the same core to your point of us like this is how we're getting our feet wet. Some of us use it to get used to the player pool. Some of us, like yourself, uses the volume, which we'll talk about here shortly, because you know it's the old saying, if you find something you're good at, take advantage of it. Well, you're good at it, so play more 50s. That just makes sense in the end game here. Like we talk about, like Waxman he maxes out the Gladiator, like a lot of those guys do, because they have their formula to it, and it's just kind of the way things go. Like I play a lot of DFS. I usually do like a 3 max or something, but some guys will do the 150 because they know their recipe to it type deal.
So, yeah.
All right. Are you still playing anything else in the NFBC, or is it strictly 50s only and that's it?
I've done the CLQ, which the last 2 years, I'm not sure this year. So the CLQ is you draft a $150 draft and hold, you draft an online championship, and you draft a main event, and then you see how you do. And I finished, I think, in the top 40 this year. I may take the year off from Fab Leagues. I'm not quite sure. Like, I love OCs. They're so much fun. But and I love the main event and the stress of it and agonizing over every fab bid and then all week changing them and tweaking them. But I'm also, it's a grind, and I do so many 50s that just setting, I figured out a routine to not have it, to have a life and do a high volume of 50s. I think I have a decent balance with that. So I may just do 50s this year. I'm not quite sure. I'm on the fence. The 50s are what fund me being able to do main events and other maybe higher end NFBC formats. But so I'm not sure. I probably will end up every year. I say I'm not going
We'll see you in the draft rooms later. I know how this goes.
Probably.
I'm like you every offseason. I'm going to only do like 6 fab leagues. Next thing you know, I have 12 again. I'm like, why did I do this to myself? But
I know. And yeah.
Now, to your point about
that's the where I'm in November.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still sticking to one draft at a time right now. So we'll see where that continues to go. That'll probably change quickly. But to your point, the balance makes a ton of sense, because if you're going to do the volume, at least with the 50s, you set your lineups Mondays and Fridays. Like, you're good. It's set. You're done. In a fab, you're setting your lineups Mondays and Fridays. Plus, you're putting the fab work in. But like, there's a lot. Like, you have a family. You're a busy, you know, career-oriented person. So it's like your point of the balance. That's the hardest thing so many of us talk about. Yeah. How do you find that balance? Because eventually, like Ryan and I talk about it a lot, is being dads, the fab balance takes a hit once in a while. That's just the reality, because like we prefer to be, you know, the dad. So I get where you're coming from.
It's tough to justify the amount of time on a Sunday that I feel like I need to put into fab leagues to do them well and not feel like I don't want to do it at the expense of my family. And so that's what I'm trying to juggle, is that I love drafting. I mean, I do draft a lot of 50s, but I would do more, but I also have tried to feel like, all right, what's the max I can do and still be a whole person and not just somebody who's
question.
And it still takes a lot of time.
Oh, definitely. Question four. Yeah, setting lineups does take time regardless of the fab part of it. For before we get into the 50s, I got another question for you. What is it? I'm just curious. What is it that you like about fantasy baseball? I ask this as in the question of some people love the statistics part of it, you know, especially now that more and more advanced stuff comes out. Some people just like the puzzle. Some people just love the game of baseball. Like, there's so many different factors that bring people to fantasy baseball. What is it for you? Because if you're playing a volume, I'm curious what is it that I know the drafting part, obviously we all are love the draft's the best part, but now you have 6 months to do this. What is it about baseball, fantasy baseball, that you enjoy the most?
First and foremost, I love baseball. I remember collecting baseball cards as a kid, getting the newspaper on Sundays and poring over statistics and box scores. And I love that aspect of it. And I love the competitiveness of fantasy baseball. And I love listening to all the podcasts and collecting information and looking at projection systems and then trying to figure out if where I might tweak things. And it's really, I have found the NFBC to be the best format. And a lot of it is NFBC, and it's how it's structured. It's the people in it. And I like the fact that there are no trades. I like that it's just you draft, and that's your team, and you can be as active and interactive as you want to be. And I do love the puzzle aspect. I love, in this draft we're in now, I did draft a lot of speed. It wasn't like, oh, okay, so I'm going to have to do a very different build than I would normally do. That part of each pick is different. And I love at the end trying to see how it all fits together with 50 players.
No, definitely. I love that. It is quite the puzzle, especially the 50s. And we'll start to get into that now is, you draft your starters, not always in that order. Sometimes you got your bench earlier, but you're drafting depth pieces. We'll talk about that part of the strategy. You're talking like depth in positions and depth in statistics at the same time. Like, there's a whole puzzle to it because injuries happen. I guess the old joke, as the season goes on, some lineups are easier to set than others because just the red briefcases take over and it limits your decisions. Like, that's just one of those things. So we'll start with the initial question. What interests you in the volume of 50s compared to like playing maybe 5 or 10? I don't know the exact number. How much is your usual volume? What interests you in just, besides just, you know, drafting as much as you can, what interests you in the volume of 50s?
I guess embarrassed. I think I had 54 50s last year. That was a lot. Awesome. I love to diversify the portfolio, I guess you would call it. I do so many that I can wait for value. I don't feel like I have to get Jacob Lopez of the A's in. If it's a good value, I can take it. If not, there's always another draft. And I love diversifying, saying, okay, I already have 2 shares of Shohei Ohtani. Let's try an Aaron Judge build and see how that I love. And then as I get going in the drafts, I start to figure out what works best for me. Do I feel comfortable with 2 closers early in the draft? Do I not? And then get more and more acclimated to the player pool. But then like in the draft we're in now, there have been a few players that I was interested in, and I was sniped several times in the last few rounds. I thought, oh, well, I can get that player hopefully next draft. Or so I don't feel like I have to move this player up 3 rounds. I need to get Kevin McGonigal in this draft because everybody's talking about him, and I can wait and see, hopefully I can get better value. And then the other thing is if I had a lot of Kyle Tucker last year and he missed so much of the season, it really sinks a lot of your teams. And so that way, if with the balance, and hopefully if you build successful benches, you can overcome that. But then I'm not so heavily invested in 1 or 2 players that my whole season really rides on them.
When you mentioned diversify, I've heard that term's used a lot in fantasy. Do you prefer to diversify the front of your draft? Is it the whole draft, like throughout your pockets? Because I was actually telling Ben earlier today that I've noticed I've done like 5 drafts so far. I've mixed up my front part quite a bit, but it seems like once I get around pick 25 and beyond, I'm in that same wheelhouse, which is not a great feeling. How do you prefer to diversify?
I definitely try to diversify the first few rounds. So like if I don't, I might have LA De La Cruz ranked ahead of JRAM, but if I already have an LA share, I might take a JRAM to diversify. But I do find, especially past round 30, I tend to, there's players that I like for whatever reason that I tend to have a lot of. Like last year, I was really heavily invested in Geraldo Perdomo, Ben Rice, Nick Kurtz, but I was also heavily invested in Michael Toglia. So there were some big swings and misses, but I found, like, especially if I can identify players that I feel like are going late, that will be solid contributors at some point. I love to load up on them. So I will, I mean, last year, I think Perdomo, out of my 50 some shares, I think I had, or 50 some drafts, I think I had over 20 shares of Perdomo. Did I think he was going to have this season? No. But now it's hard for me to take him 25 rounds earlier or 20 rounds earlier, but I'm trying to let go of that bias. And, but I do find, I try to not get in a rut too. But it is tough. If I identify a player I like and I feel like it's a good value, it's hard not to smash the button every time.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at. I don't try to like force the issue, as you mentioned with like Jacob Lopez earlier. But if it's, say, it's a guy I'm interested in, it's like I keep them on my radar. I check every time in my queue. I'm like, okay, now he's coming on my team because he's still sitting here. It just feels like that's kind of the snag. I have a ton of Casey Mize. That's just one that comes to mind. But there's a bunch of dudes I know. I'm targeting the same guys over and over again. Yeah. I like your point about it's a problem every drafter, I'm pretty sure, or let's say 80% of drafters face. You get the Perdomo at that amazing value last year. He has the year of years. Now the ADP climbs. It's just natural progression. Yeah. And trying to convince yourself, is it worth the ADP? No way, I can't. Like, we all have that discussion. Like, it was Marcus Simeon for years. It was Perdomo with us last year. There's a group of dudes every season where you're like Nick Kurtz this year, perfect example. Like, am I playing a first-round price for Nick Kurtz? And getting past that and finding the yes or no, that's a million-dollar question sometimes. Yeah. But very, very – I'm glad you mentioned that, 'cause that happens to everybody.
Yeah. What I'm trying to do now is find the next Perdomo, try to find the next, you know, is it Aiden Miller? Is it Justin Crawford? Is it, I mean, try to who it is. And I'm hoping as we get more information and rosters start to settle and free agents sign, I always love to look back at my first few drafts and what was I thinking? Like, why did I draft this player on this team? But I hope as we get more information, I think also doing a high volume, if I'm heavily invested in JJ Weatherholt right now, I might not be 6 weeks from now. And so not hopefully having 19 shares of him, if I have five or six and he doesn't start out, he's not the third baseman for the Cardinals, he doesn't break, you know, the roster out of spring training, it'll be okay. And so that's the other thing I found, is that just over time, my drafts in February look very different than my drafts now. Okay. Before Oopsie is out and before all of the other projection systems.
That leads me to like you just mentioned, trying to find the next Perdomo. That's the angle you should take. Like, how do I find that value this season? Who's it? Because there always is going to be somebody. There's going to be a few of them. And she's like, it goes Robbie Ray when Phil do so well, like out of nowhere, just picked up Robbie Ray. There's always a few every year. What do you use to find the next so-and-so? Is it a specific statistical category? Is it a group? Like you mentioned different projections, which ones do you prefer? Because we all have our feelings on certain ones. Like, how do you go about your process of trying to analyze players, either just in general or even looking for the next guy?
Well, the first stop for me is James Anderson from RotoWire with his every Wednesday podcast. Especially in the off season when he addresses, he has whole shows dedicated to rookies for 2026. And then I start doing my own. When I hear names on, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I write down names. I'm often out running early in the morning before heading into work, and my wife will get, I just text these random names to my wife and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, that's Jacob Latz. He's a pitcher for, I just didn't want to forget that. I want to look into him later. And she just has learned to ignore those like 5:30 AM random just a list of names. But then I like to do my own deep dives and just see what does James Anderson like. But that's usually my starting point. And then looking back at, I like to look back at the last 2 months of the season to see, were there improvements for a player? And then I like to read a lot of, follow a lot of the beat writers, follow a lot of very much smarter people than me on Twitter. And your Discord has been, I mean, the Bubba and the Bloom Discord is an amazing resource for names, ideas. I'd never heard of Mac, the catcher, before. Yeah. I've started hearing his name. And so I'm like, let's look into, oh my goodness, he would be a great C3 or C4 in a 50. Yep. But now everybody else has heard that name, it seems like. And so his price is going up. And then, so it's that ever evolving, this player, like Connor Griffin. I've tried to get Connor Griffin from the rookie for the Pirates, and I just can't because he keeps going earlier and earlier. But if he signs an extension and I know he's going to play, I would probably hop in on him. So again, I think it's just over time, the portfolio diversifies for me. And I just love drafting, but I love, I use projection systems. I'm not married to them, but I use them to see, but I've also found at this point, Steamer has some interesting playing time.
It's bad. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I take a lot of it with a grain of salt, but I do look and see, oh, which players are really popping? Like which players are outperforming in my head, the expectations that I would have for that player. And I'm on Roster Resource quite a bit. I use the reliever recon to fall right now. One of the hardest things is closers, and with what half the teams don't have a set closer right now. Yep. And that's part of the diversification too, is I don't want to have 7 shares of Devin Williams this early and realize, oh, he's the setup. He's going back to New York and he's the setup guy now for Bednar. So, but I love just gathering information, talking to people, the Discord. I lurk more than type, but I'm on it a lot and just absorbing. I mean, so many smart people in the Discord and they're really knowledgeable. That's what I find is the NFBC players know their stuff and they're very friendly and welcoming for the most part. And it's also a fun Discord, but there's names that I have not heard of that I look into. I don't always draft them, but it's like, oh, I've Jefferson Cuero. I know who that is, but I didn't think he was going to get much playing time. But maybe he will. And so it's just, that's when I do my own dives.
Yeah, it's a great, I'm biased, of course, but it's a very great resource. There's a lot of very smart people in there that bring a lot to my attention as well. So I'm with you on that. All right, let's start with just the brass tacks, the basics here. We're talking 50. So you mentioned earlier, 12 team, 50 rounds. That's your team. That's what they call it, a draft and hold. Set your lineups Monday and Friday for hitters, Monday only for pitchers. If you're new to the NFBC, that's the structure. But you're building your roster. It's your typical 23-man starters. You got your pitchers and your offense, and then you got the bench, 27 bench players. What's just your general strategy? We're going to get into pitching and hitting and all that good stuff. But when you walk, like when you sign up for your draft, you get your draft spot. We'll talk KDS in a minute as well. What's just your general strategy? Yeah. Are you attacking your hitters early or pitchers early? Or what do you go with there?
So it starts for me with KDS, the first, and this is a first world problem to have, but my first 5 drafts, I drafted first or second.
Gosh.
I don't think I drafted first one time last year. So I was like, do I have 5 Shohei Ohtani? So I think I have 3 Shoheis and 2 judges. I still have not, I've done 11 50s. I still have not drafted any later than 8th. Wow. And so it's been hard for me to get like a Junior Caminero, who I'm really interested in. He's always gone on that coming back for round 2. And so that's so what I'm going to start doing, I think, is changing my KDS to put 9, 10, 11, and 12 first, which seems so strange. Like it's a good problem to have, but I'm like,
if you're doing volume, it makes sense. You want to mix it. That's the whole diversification right there. Yeah.
And I have one thing that I do my off season is, I guess, 2 weeks. There's, I guess, like maybe 3 weeks between the end of the season and the start of the new one. But as I look, and last year I was power deficient. And so I've really tried to make sure that I leave those first few rounds with power. And I found that I think that there are some people can get double-digit stolen bases towards the, you know, the rounds 20 to 35. And I find it's harder to have power bats that don't kill your average. So I've really tried to do that. I was a huge pocket aces person per Toby for a long time, but I've then found I've decided I'm really focusing on offense in my first few rounds. But in this draft we're in, I just took Skeens because I didn't have a share of Skeens. And so I just went in, but I'm like, okay, that's the other part of doing volume is I can change my mind on the fly and think, well, I was going to go a power bat here, but it's Paul Skeens. That's 230 strikeouts, maybe 8 wins, hopefully, but I can work on wins, you know, great ratios. And then I can really focus more on pitchers in those, you know, rounds 5 to 8 or 9.
No, that's makes a ton of sense because, yeah, the diversification, like the way I want to in these drafts too, but like I'll do heavy volume, say like an underdog, and it's not a 12 person, but I'll get frustrated when it's like, hey, I've had like 6 straight first picks. Like I need the back. I have to have the back to like, and you can't even set a KDS there. Like you can in the NFBC to your point. And for those that are curious, it's Kentucky Derby style. You basically rank your draft picks, and when the draft's full, draft slot, then they run a KDS, and that'll determine where you go. I'd find a better way to describe it, but that's the gist of it right there. So you're going more hitter heavy, which is how I roll as well, except I will switch it up as well. Like you said, I don't just pass on things just to pass on it per se. So yeah. If something's sitting there, I'll go that direction. Do you prefer to focus on positional needs throughout like early in the draft, like knowing like scarcity is the word people use, or do you focus more on statistical? I think when you said power, you're leaning statistical. But is that it's like a trend this year? Or is that a normal thing for you?
I for whatever reason, last year I was power deficient in the 50s. Normally I'm not. Like historically. So, but what I try to do is I just try to build balance because at this point, I can't tell you how many home runs Nick Kurtz is going to hit. And projection systems seem like, so what I try to build balance. At the end of a typical draft for me, I'm going to have 28 batters and 22 pitchers. And in my head, I've got my ideal. I want, you know, 6 relievers, but that can change. Did I get 2 solid closers at the top? But I've also found that I feel most comfortable when I, through the first 3 rounds, have, ideally, that's when you're going to get the power speed combo with decent average. And so I found if I go pitching, like I took Skeens, then I felt I was nervous. So I got, and then I grabbed Kurtz in round 2. I'm like, oh my, and then I took Yordan in round 3. Like I have no speed. So That's going to change my next 46 rounds. To try to make sure that I don't, I look at the historical targets for 50s and all the categories for the 80th and 90th percentile, and I try to hit those leaving the draft. And regardless what the draft pros grade says at the end, I found that my Fs usually do better than my A pluses. But that's what I try to do is at the end, I just want a balanced team. I want to be competitive in all the categories and not, and also injuries are going to come. I had a team that finished 11th in the league and was one of the bottom like 50 teams out of all the thousands of 50s drafted. And I literally couldn't set the roster. It was there were red suitcases. So, and it was just one of those, like, I really liked the team, but like, oh, nope, all my players are injured or lost their closer. You know, I had Ryan Helsley and it's like, oh, that, there goes that. So, but it's also trying to learn from it for me. But yeah, at the end of the day, focus on power. But then it's always at the expense of something. I love to get 2 really solid catchers, but then you can't get everything. And if I also want to get a closer and I want to get a starting pitcher or 2 for an ace and power, you can't do it all. And so that's sometimes I just like this draft that we're in. I'm going to figure out speed more in the middle and back end, hopefully, than I will in another draft. And then, so really, I think the first 3 or 4 rounds dictate to me which direction I'm going.
Okay. No, that's actually a great way to look at it. Like, hey, I'm going to go with the flow of the draft, look to make the best 3 to 4 best picks, like not force something, but then based on that is I got 46 rounds to shape my team from there. That's kind of build your identity.
I mean, actually I makes really a ton want, of sense. Yeah. I really want a share of Junior Caminero. It's almost like now I'm changing my KDS to possibly just get him. And I've come close a few times, but yeah. So for me, once I took Skeens and then I took Kurtz and Jordan, it's going to look very different than other builds that I have through rounds 4 and 5, where I might end up with a JRAM and or like if you get Otani in the first round and then you're on that 2-3 turn, it just really limits. I found where you start your draft really limits some of the player pool that you don't typically have access to in the early rounds. And that really can shape things. And I have the player share. There's a tab or a link on the NFBC player shares. And I go to that all the time and I'll look and say, I already have 3 Tyler Molly shares. Do I want 4 this early? Even if I think he's going to do well, I only have 1 David Peterson share. Let's get a second one of him instead of that 4th share of Tyler Molly, just in case his elbow explodes and he's gone or he doesn't live up to performance. And then, so that's the other part for me is trying. And so I'll make a conscious decision. Like in this specific draft that I'm like, I'll decide, okay, I'm going to get Augustin Ramirez. I'm going to get the Goose. And I'm going to get 1 other early catcher. I know I'm going to be light on starting pitching if I do that. And I get a closer and I try to get some power. So what then looking at the draft board, I like to look at the last couple of weeks draft board too, just to see kind of where I can expect this player to go over the last few weeks and adjust from there. Because I'd look at like some of the Murakami, the third baseman free agent. I just took him. I didn't want to because I already have a couple of shares, but in the draft we're in, it was his max pick, I think. And I thought, well, I only have 1 third baseman and let's see. It could totally flame out. But that was one of those that changed my – so I do look at min and max as well to see when – if I really want to get Bubba Chandler, when should I mentally prepare to be ready to pull the trigger on him?
No, that's a lot of good stuff you just dropped right there. That, when to go for certain guys. I love the Molly thing because I get made fun of a lot as I had a ton of Albert Suarez shares last year. I should have looked at my shares and not gotten so many. Like I was looking at the value innings pitched and at least should have cut that in half probably just for the same logic you were giving there. Things along those lines go a long, long way. So, yeah, very, very good bulk drafting stuff right there about how you want to diversify throughout there. And the Murakami thing made me laugh because I'll get ridiculed for taking Mookie Betts in the draft we're in right now, but that was the lowest he's gone. Like, I'm sitting there, like, I kept passing on him and passing. I'm like, okay, I got a Mookie Betts share. Let's see what I get round 4 or whatever. Like, okay, let's see what Mookie Betts can do in round 4.
So we're drafting next to each other in this draft. He was the top of my queue, but I already have 2 shares, and I just thought, look at his age. Like, what if I know the last few months he put, I don't know. So I was like, that's what I struggle with too. But and there's so many, what I find too is drafting in October, November, December, very few people don't know what they're doing. Like if you're throwing money into a draft in November or especially before ADP was set, you're probably a lunatic and you must know your stuff. And so that's what I find is that the rooms I think are sharper now than once we get into February and March, and you get people who the owners tend to be more active. You recognize a lot of the owners in the draft. And I like that too. And I like to look at other people's drafts that I've completed just to see, like, I like to learn from people like, oh, what does this, I'm so curious why that person did this. And so, and then I think this, so then I try to look, I look at other people's drafts and try to figure out the strategy behind it. And is it something I should be looking at, like incorporating, or this player I've noticed has taken this player in 3 drafts I've been in with him. I wonder why. And that's when I'll send my wife the odd text with a name. And then I'll go back at night and I'll look and see what is it that this very sharp player has found of interest and note about, you know, this particular second baseman.
Interesting. I like that a lot. Some people have portfolios on the people they draft against. That's a little much, but to your point, you drafted enough of them to pay attention. Like, I already know you're, if I'm going to draft with you and I want Goose, I have to go early because he will be very aggressive on Goose. So like those are little things we pick up on throughout the drafting. I want to, we're going to talk offense
for you
now. Let's split it up. We have offense, and then we'll talk pitching here in a bit here. Offensively, when you're entering your draft, again, like, okay, so your first few rounds kind of dictate your draft. But are you and you mentioned you're attacking power early. Are you focused on – right now you're focused on power. We've established this. But, like, you know, your Francisco Lindors, your J-Rams, certain guys you can just pencil in 25, 25, 30, 30, and you move on. Are those guys, you know, in theory should be higher up on your list? Or do you have, like, a preference of a, I guess, an offensive skill set you're looking for? Like, does Big Meat Pete actually fit a target of yours, or are you too worried about certain profiles, I guess is what I'm trying to say?
I tend to not have a lot of Big Meat Pete just – and that could be so. This year, I've actually taken him in two drafts, just because I normally don't. What I find is, when I'm done with the draft, I want at least three, most likely four, players that can play each position. Even if it's like Brendan Donovan's second base outfield, like I will count him. I know some people don't, but I will count him as both a second baseman and an outfielder. And I want 10 outfielders, but I want four of every infield. It makes me feel better and to have depth, because what I find is if you lose, you're going to lose players with no fab. You're going to lose players, and I don't want to take zeros. And randomly last year, what I really lucked into was a lot of the Sal Perez's and the Ben Rice's and the Wilson Contreras that could, I put them at first base or corner quite a bit, because I lucked into some catchers. And so it's just having that positional flexibility. But I will use Ryan Bloom's tracker. And I'm always trying to get to that 80th percentile. And I look at how each pick, what does drafting Pete Alonso do to my other categories? It's going to really help in RBI home runs, but what's that going to do to average? And that's what I'll look to in. And I didn't have a single share of Yordan Alvarez last year. I took him in the draft we're in now. I don't know how I feel about it, but in the ideal world, in the first few rounds, I'm getting somebody with both who can steal bases and hit home runs. But then it's what I want to do is I don't like feeling like in round 12, I really am sunk in batting average. I took a lot of low batting average players, or I don't have any speed. I need to really focus on, it doesn't feel good for me to draft Victor Robles, as I'm a big Mariner fan, but it's not always fun to hit that button. But sometimes that's what I don't like to look and say, okay, he's projected for 14 steals. I would prefer like a Harrison Bader, somebody like around that can do both. And Lindor is set it and forget it, super steady, like you mentioned. And I love that. What I try to do too, is I look for position scarcity. Like I do not like second base. I do not like first base or third base. Second base, there's some at the end. There's some depth, but I try to, that's the other part is, do you want to be light on outfield after seven or eight rounds? If you get a first baseman, a second baseman, a third baseman, and you have to sacrifice things. And so what I've tried to do is figure out what I'm good at. And I've been pretty good at finding pitching. I've been pretty good at finding catchers, listening to you and others who really know the catching position. So I feel like if I don't get a second catcher that I like up top, I can find somebody. And so it's a lot of pivoting for me, but I don't like if Christian Walker is my first baseman.
Yeah.
And so there are some drafts where I will just,
a lot of that has to go to knowing the player pool as you do. So that goes a long way. And it's also doing a lot of drafts, all those reps and all those drafts help a ton as well. You mentioned there's the pivoting, there's, you know, you don't want to be late, low on average in round 12 because it's harder to find average late. 1000% agree. Like my focus right now in draft season, I want to look for average and power early, which is one reason I've actually found myself actually drafting Vladito this year. Now the power I like more of, but you know, playing 160 plus games with a 300 average goes a long way in letting me be flexible later in the draft. We'll see if that pans out, just the way my brain thinks on it. You mentioned you're okay sacrificing or being light on certain things because, as you know, anytime you draft, you're sacrificing things. Like you said, if I go catcher early, if I go relief pitcher early, so on and so forth, you're sacrificing something. It's always like the price analysis. Is it worth the pick type thing? What are you okay sacrificing at this point? You know, again, it's November. It's around Thanksgiving. And you said 11 or 12 drafts. Through these early drafts, like, is it a stat, a position? What are you okay sacrificing right now?
I found, first of all, what I'm not comfortable sacrificing is I feel better having a guaranteed, someone who as of November 24th or 25th has the closing gig. Like, yeah. It makes me feel better to have one of those. And so I know that for me, what I found is if I'm a little light in starting pitching, I feel okay. And that in those rounds 15 to 25, I can hopefully land on a Nathan Eovaldi. I can land on one of these, like maybe a Chase Burns will be this year's, like the player that provides top five or top seven value, where I don't want to sacrifice at least getting one person that I feel comfortable with saves. Knowing last year that did not work for me. That was, you know, if you had Edwin Diaz was fine, but if you had Devin Williams or Ryan Helsley or Class A, that hurt. And then, yeah, for me, I would say I'm the most comfortable right now with starting pitching and I find that there's so many shortstops that I would love to take two shortstops early, but I'm very happy with Jacob Wilson. Or one thing for me too is if I land on, let's say, a Corey Seager, and it's a shortstop that traditionally you get stolen bases from shortstop. With Corey Seager, you're not going to get that. Then I'm going to have to, okay, if I do take Corey Seager, I probably need steals from a non-traditional position, like maybe a Michael Garcia, someone that I wouldn't normally take at that position, but I need to get those stats so I'm at the 80th percentile when it's all done, assuming health and that the projections are somewhat accurate. I feel very nervous not having a top two. If I don't have a catcher by the time Kirk is off the board or Gabriel Moreno, that makes me very nervous. I don't like, so I found that too. I try things and that makes me very uncomfortable. I don't like that. So I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. I don't blame you at all. Those are catcher twos. Once you start getting past there, almost catcher threes at points as you get deeper down that world. You mentioned it's a great point. Like, okay, so I take Seager, I want Michael Garcia, getting steals at third base, not traditional, so on and so forth. It could be even with your relief pitcher situations, because it is a disaster right now with so many guys. You almost want to, you know, put their backups in there. Let's use the Michael Garcia example. In a player like of that, where you know you need A, the position, and B, the stats, how far are you okay moving certain players up as you're drafting? Obviously, this will change throughout draft season, but like, are you good going around two rounds, three rounds? Some guys are just like, screw it, I'm going to take value later. How are you about adjusting to ADP, basically?
That's where I use the – you can set the filters on the draft boards for the 50s or whatever draft you're doing to see when they've been going in the last 3 weeks. And if I need speed and I see I will make sure to get him even if I set them in. If I feel like his stolen bases will help me more than any other. And ultimately, yeah, to me, it's I guess it's more stats for me, but I feel more comfortable reaching a round or two or three if I need to, if I feel like those are the stats that I need to move forward and like regain balance if I've kind of gotten out of balance due to. The other thing is there can be amazing value in quotes in November, perceived values that it's like, how can I not draft this player? Like, he's this outfielder should have. I don't know, why is he still here? And that, the first thing I do is make sure he's not injured. I didn't miss anything. And then it's like, well, then I didn't want to take a third outfielder in round six, but how can I not? And then that's when it's that pivoting. And that's when volume comes in. Because if I only did three drafts, I would feel very differently. Or if I did five. But with doing a lot, I can, okay, I'm going to have all five out, my five starting outfielders filled out very early in this draft. And other positions are going to be ugly because of that. And then that's hopefully when you can hit on some of the later round second baseman, third baseman, first baseman type or relief pitchers that you take your specs on. And that's, so that's what I would say is by round 15 or 20, I would love to be all balanced where all of my categories are roughly around the 80th percentile. I don't like to intentionally punt things. I sometimes punt if your two closers get injured, but I like that balance. And then I feel like once I'm balanced after round 15 or 20, then 21 through 50, I can take players that are of interest to me that I think maybe have higher upside. I don't want to feel like I have to only take speed first people in these next seven or eight hitters because I am in the 12th percentile in speed right now. I don't like being limited.
Yeah, I love how you bring that up. It's like after around 20, you have a good idea who your starters are, because in reality, in any of these draft and hold formats, 12 or 15, your starters you're hoping plays all season. That's just the reality of the situation, unless you hit big on somebody. But obviously injuries and whatnot will take place. So to your point, if you're tracking it, this is your balance. I like how you basically mentioned, so the next 30 rounds, I can start, you know, taking some chances here and there. I can get creative with building my depth, where some guys maybe are more cautious until like the last 10 rounds or something. That flexibility could go a long ways, honestly. And because you can still get boring safe picks rounds 40 through 50, but take the chance in rounds 25 through 35 or something. So this, just saying that out loud and hearing you say it makes a lot of sense. It's all about the package as a whole, not how you got there type thing. Yeah. Let's talk pitching real quick. We'll start with pitching, not real quick. We'll talk pitching. So you mentioned you usually don't take pitching early. I'm with you. You do take closers somewhat early, you're saying, because you want to have at least one elite closer. Yeah. So why don't you just you can group it together or run with it. Starting pitching, closers, how do you start your staff out? Like, how do you want to start your staff out? What are you looking for? And then how does that build into your closers? Because it's the old adage, like, in the first 10 rounds, I'd like two starters, a closer, a catcher. I have six of those, whatever. How do you go about it?
Yeah, the for me, I want a capital C closer one. And I typically don't want to take the first closer off the board, but I want to take one quickly after. And that's when the diversification, like I do right now, I have two shares of Josh Hader. I'm assuming he will come back. I always try to make sure I get Brian Abreu. Maybe that's when it's like, okay, I took Josh Hader. I have to get Brian Abreu. It will, in case Hader, whatever happened, because I don't think he had surgery. Assuming he comes back. And really, when you look at it, there are half the teams, I feel like, that don't have a set closer. Or is, like, I don't know what to make of Abner Uribe right now, or McGill in Milwaukee. I think McGill's the closer, but I don't know. And it's so to me, if I get Johan Duran, I get an Edwin Diaz, I get an Andres Munoz, barring injury, they should get 25 plus saves and good ratios and strikeouts. For my starting pitchers, I want K's and I want good ratios. And I feel like if I can't get one of those top three of Crochet or Skeens or Skubal, I will kind of wait and see. Like, oh, like, I love Christopher Sanchez. I'm really high on him for this year. I'm okay. If that's where that volume too comes in play, where it's like, okay, this is I don't feel like I have to get Christopher Sanchez in a specific draft. There will be a draft in which, for whatever reason, he goes at or past his ADP, and that's when I'll pounce. And that's that. What I try not to do is, like, I'll look at Sonny Gray's projections. And I'm like, why don't I have him on every team? And then that's when I look at that, my player shares, to be like, okay, you already have 4 shares of Sonny Gray. I would rather pivot and go to somebody else. But I found that there are globs after those top 3. I will make my own loose pitcher rankings and kind of in tiers. And then I just want to get at least 1 or 2 players from that, starting pitchers, at least from those tiers. And it doesn't have to be, it could be Hunter Brown one time. And then it's like, well, I like what I'm struggling with right now is like what to do with Zach Wheeler, who I love, but I don't know what it's going to look like. What to do with all of those rookie pitchers that are going in the top 10, 11 rounds. And so if I'm going to take a Chase Burns, I want to make sure that I have a solid starter or 2 solid and consistent, like an established veteran, I guess. So then I'm still looking at those targets, but I feel like there's a lot of pitchers that will get, like Logan Webb, not the most exciting pitcher, but if you look at the end of the year, he puts up numbers. And so that for me is more, I don't want to be over invested in a specific pitcher, especially pitchers with they're so volatile, but looking in those tiers and making sure by maybe rounds, by round seven or eight, I want to at least have 2 solid starters, ideally. Sometimes that doesn't work out, but then in my head, they're SP1s or SP2s. And if I feel like I'm light, then I'm going to maybe in those next rounds 10 to 20, I'm going to take maybe 2 or 3 more pitchers than I would normally to just spec on a Nathan Eovaldi or make sure that I'm voluming my way. Hopefully if my SP4, 5, and 6 are stronger than other people's, even if my SP1 and 2 are lighter than theirs, I feel like it'll balance out.
That's a great point. I like that. There's the volume part to it. If I have this kind of core, maybe they'll be better than the rest of the pool that you're facing, which makes a ton of sense. Cause I'm with you. Like, for me, it's after the top couple starters, it's a lot of similarities. Like, you could pick your poisons, to your point. So it's a lot of, like, they use the term globs. There's multiple globs. It's like, so give me 1 or 2 from here, 1 or 2 from here, and like, I'll build, like, it'll make it work. So
yeah,
I usually have 2 starters before, you know, the top 10 rounds is done. But when those 2 come are different, like the draft we're doing now, I was actually more aggressive on outfielders and starting pitchers than I've been in any other draft. It's kind of the way things kept falling. It felt like I'm like, okay, I can build elsewhere. This like seems too good to pass up. So that's how I diversified in this one. It feels like not on purpose, just kind of went with the draft. But yeah, to your starting pitching point, it is a very blobby situation right now outside of the elites. And I usually don't take one that early, so won't have a lot of shares of the elites, unfortunately. When we're talking closers real quick, you mentioned like Abner Uribe real quick, right? Coming quickly after Hader. Miguel and Abner, no clue what to do. You mentioned Abreu with Hader. How aggressive are you? Because it is only like half the league has a closer right now. There's a ton of free agent closers right now. How aggressive are you in that kind of middle to later pocket of closers, I guess? When you know, because you get to the draft room and after, say, Bednar company, it gets real murky real quick. And how do you approach that?
I struggle with that because it's hard for me to draft Griffin Jacks in the round where he goes, because he has great ratios and he'll put up solid numbers, but that's where I feel better if I at least have 1 solid closer. And in the draft we're in now, I drafted Hader and someone moved up Abreu. And so I was not ready to take him there. And so I'm like, oh, I need to figure out what I'm going to do. I try to, in my ideal world, I have 2 closers that I leave the draft feeling very comfortable with, and I have 3 to 4 specs. I've been specking a lot, I feel like, in the last few drafts on Reds pitchers. But I don't know if Tony Santian will be the person, or Maxwell, or Connor Phillips. So I try to, that's where I try to, with the volume, sprinkle in. Or you know, does Emilio Pagan come back? Like, he might. And that's where I, so when news came out about Kittredge going to Baltimore, I made sure to draft Kittredge And then you read the new news and it's like, oh, they're still in the market for somebody. So that's why I don't want to have four, but I try to find arms that will put up good ratios and strikeouts. And even if they don't get saves, I can plug them in if my starters don't have good matchups or they're injured. But at the end, what I don't want to do is take six closer specs, my last six picks, because I feel like those usually don't hit. I'm not embarrassed to admit I drafted Victor Vodnik in a draft. I'm like, well, he's right now has a good shot at getting saves. I won't have 12 shares of him, but I'll have a couple. And that's the way I view it, is like, let's look at bullpens. Let's look at who's up next in the bullpen in case that person gets injured. And knowing that free agent dominoes will blow up a lot of these things. Like, do you feel comfortable with Dennis Santana? I don't know how I feel about him.
It's tough with him. Like the Pirates, them likely spending money is always a crapshoot, but yeah, it's probably a coin toss at best with Dennis Santana. I know that's not the answer everybody wants, but to your point, do I feel great about it? No, I have no shares of Dennis Santana at this point, if that answers your question.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I struggle with. There are bullpens where the closer that is on roster resource or on reliever recon right now may not be the closer in 6 weeks. Like Daniel Palencia, I think he will be the closer, but and so it's hard for me to invest that capital, like draft capital, in that range when I look and see, like, I could get a starting pitcher who could get me 165 or 170 strikeouts, decent ratios, and 10 wins, or I could get a zero from this guy from saves. And it's ultimately certain picks I just need you to get saves. So that's what I try to avoid that when possible. Like Usetta from the Rays, I love him. I drafted him a lot last year. He didn't get me saves that I was hoping for. And like, I don't know with Peter Fairbanks what to do with him right now or some of these other. So that's why I feel like if I get one of the quote unquote safe closers now, I feel better at the end of the draft. Just if there's a good value on someone I feel like is a good arm, like a Matt Brash of the M's, that if something happened to Andrés Muñoz, I would imagine he would get a share, assuming health. And so I will try to get a share or two of him. And he could put up as many strikeouts in a week as a starting pitcher potentially. That's the one that I struggle with right now, or I've just had to embrace the uncertainty of November with 15 teams not knowing who their closer is yet.
Yeah, it's extremely challenging, to your point. What's your usual layout? Is it like how many pitchers, not just combined pitchers, do you like to leave the draft room with compared to hitters?
I tend to end up with 28 hitters, 22 pitchers. I would love to have 17 starters and 5 relievers, but if I don't feel solid with my first few closers, then I will maybe take one or two less starters, and I will pivot to that when I might prioritize a Griffin Jacks or another pitcher who, I mean, like last year, Cade Smith, no thought that he would get saves, but I like the number. I liked his skills. I like the strikeouts. He's done it for several years in a row. He was the next person up if something happened. So I try to identify those players, but it is that if I do this, what am I sacrificing? And so that's when I look, and if I'm balanced heading into like round 20, then I feel much better taking a shot in the dark on somebody who I hope will get me 10 to 20 saves potentially. Over, I feel like if I'm really light in runs and RBIs, I need to focus more on that and not take shots on those kind of middle relievers that don't have a defined role yet. So does that make sense?
No, it makes a ton of sense. I like picking the brain on that one, because a lot of people say like anywhere from 26 to 28 pitchers, or not pitchers. Like anywhere from 20 to 23 pitchers, you hear a lot coming off, but it's always like what division. And in recent years, I've been hearing more and more like, I want more starters, I want more innings, I want more chances at Ks, chances at wins. Let's see what the ratios do. Like that's four categories out of the five type thing. Because with all the injuries, with all the just insanity of closers. Heck, you mentioned Helsley. He was great. Then he got traded. We know where it went from there. Devin Williams, like, looked like he was the dude. That was a mess. Like, so on and so forth. There's so much volatility in the relief pitching world, outside of just injuries in general for pitchers, that if I can go and get a handful of starters that at least rack up innings, and hopefully you can, when you set the lineup on Monday for pitchers, like, you can play the matchups and make things work. Because in reality, you're probably going to have, hopefully, four or five starters are just locked in unless something crazy happens. And then you can piece it together with your other, like, 12 options, which is a lot better than the alternative when you're stuck with only three options and like, oh, I don't even want to throw this guy. The red suitcase looks better at this point in time. Yeah. So that's where it made a lot of sense what you're saying to me.
Okay. And the thing that I also grapple with too is how many upside, like, do you take the Miles Michaelises in the round 47 or Lance Lynn last year and you have him not pitch, or do you take, how many upside arms do you take? How many do you want Aiden Miller and Kevin McGonigal as your shortstop three and four? Do you want, how many outfielders do you, are you comfortable with that don't have guarantee? I mean, it's, again, it's the boring Benintendi's versus Justin Crawford. Like, you need, you don't want all upside, but you don't want all boring. And so that's what I'll look at too, is in my last 20 rounds or so, did I take Chase Burns? Did I take Trey Savage? If I did, I probably want to make sure on my back end that I'm taking more boring, solid pitchers that should get 150 innings, hopefully, or more, if, or 120, health permitting, because it's so tempting to take a lot of the upside guys, but then I don't want to look and say, like, oh, I have five pitchers. I have no idea if they're going to even pitch this year on my team. And so that will also inform how many closers I'll go with. Or if I have three awesome catchers, I know I don't want a fourth. And so I'm like, okay, that's one extra slot for a pitcher, or I can take Waldschmidt, the outfielder for the D-backs, like in round 47 or something, as more of a, my 11th lottery pick outfielder, because I didn't take, I've got some other solid people.
And that's that. I've always wondered about that as well. I like to know the pitching breakdowns for teams, but then the prospects, the lottery tickets, as you said, is a great term for it, because some turn into Nick Kurtz, some don't even take in a bat in the bigs the whole season, even though we thought they would. There's a lot of those out there. So you kind of mentioned you don't want to have like a ton of them, but do you like go into a draft going, okay, I'm cool taking three, four, five, whatever, a number of like chances, because you are balanced as you wanted to be in the first 20 rounds. You start taking your shots. Now there's shots like upside arms, like a Zach Wheeler potentially. But then there's shots of, here's a prospect. What's he going to be? So in the prospect world of things, how aggressive are you on that come draft things? That's a massive issue I have always.
Yeah. So like for example, for shortstop, if I have two really solid shortstops that I can count on, I'm much more likely to take, like, I want Kevin McGonigal or Weatherholt or Connor Griffin to be my shortstop three. I don't want him to be my shortstop two. And so part of it is where they go in the draft. In general, I'm comfortable with three or four lottery tickets. I mean, I think Justin Crawford of the Phillies has a great chance, it sounds like, to have significant at bats this year. He might not come up until August. Exactly. I mean, same with the Pirates and Connor Griffin. People are drafting him, you know, but then you read a report that he might not come up until August. And so that's what I try to balance, is if that lottery ticket is my number two in that position, I'm probably not going to take him. I feel much more comfortable if he's my three or my four, or if I have seven solid outfielders, let's take a stab. But also, okay, and if I take two risky outfielders, then I want to make sure that I do take a Benintendi. I know Michael Tuchman was just DFA'd, but someone like that given playing time, or even somebody boring like JP Crawford as a shortstop. Like, if I'm going to take a risk with shortstop, I want to make sure that my fourth person is somebody that I might not love it, but they're going to, health permitting, they're going to have playing time, and I can count on them. I hate taking zeros. and it's tough to wait. But I also view sometimes these players that don't make it out of spring training, I view them as more like if there were fab pickups.
Yeah.
I mean, because you look at some of the players that didn't enter, they didn't make the team out of spring training, but were amazing when they got called up. And so some of them, like, you know, if I have three other solid options, if he's this player sits on my bench for 3 months, that's okay. And I will gladly put him in. Hopefully the timing works out. But so, and for me, it's just really that, am I comfortable if that player needs to start for me? Am I comfortable with that? And I usually end toward the, I'm not very comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. So like, if I do want to, I have two JJ Weatherholt shares. I knew I wanted to take him. And so I made sure to take two solid shortstops that I felt comfortable with in case he doesn't make the Cardinals or he doesn't get third base eligibility like they're talking about. And, or he struggles like rookies typically do. Like you said, not everybody's Nick Kurtz. And then I don't want my season to be sunk on a team because I heavily invested in this player and it didn't work out.
Totally agree. Do you prefer taking hitter specs over pitching specs?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Pitchers are such a crapshoot.
Agreed. Full agree.
Even the safe ones. I will take a few upside arms. But again, I feel like if I have balance heading into round 30, I can take those spec pick, or I can take, I don't want to get Nolan McLean and Bubba Chandler and Connolly early on a team. That's too much risk for me. I can take one. And then if I know, okay, that's where I also look at my player shares to see, I don't have any Connolly early shares yet. If it fits and it's where the market roughly is now or a little later, let's take a chance. But then I know I'm probably going to go with more boring. I'm going to take more boring pitchers just in case Connolly early was a flash in the pan and it doesn't, he's not the pitcher that we think he is, or Schlittler or somebody like that, that has a lot of upside, but I couldn't tell you how many innings they're going to throw next year.
Totally agree with all of that. That's why I'm with you. Like, I'll take a couple young guys, but you look at me, I'm team boring a lot of the time. If you look at my rosters, and it's just, I'm looking for guys that are going to suit up and hit the mound every fifth day. That's kind of my goal when those guys are there. Cause basically you haven't fully said it out loud, but if people are paying attention, you said it. The key to a lot of these, just from watching successful people like yourself, is volume, volume, volume. I'm not talking draft volume. It's accumulating statistical volume. So just being out there playing, flat out playing, goes a long way in this discussion. Like you said, it's common sense. You don't want to take a zero. But there's so much like deeper levels to that. Like J.P. Crawford, yes, he's boring, but him playing every day, while a lot of teams will not have a middle infielder or a shortstop at times throughout the season, that will add up.
Well, yeah, and that's when also the multi-position eligibility players, like the last two mascots, like I think if you can get player that qualifies at corner, middle, and two other positions, even if he's maybe not the best player on the board, there's something to be said for, I can plug this player into multiple spots and I won't take a zero. That for me is just that balance and not taking zeros or feeling like I have to start this pitcher. I don't feel good about it, but I don't have any other options. And I feel like in 12s, there tend to be more options health permitting for players. I know I've said that a lot, but that's the big thing for me, is always having options at positions. And when I'm setting my lineups each Monday and Friday, so I don't feel like, and again, give me JB, very boring, but he, over Friday through Sunday, he's going to probably play all three games.
Yep.
It may not be amazing, but I see people taking rookies that I don't, at this point, like no one has said that they're in the playing times or the plans for the team. And I think that's, you can do that, but you can't, I wouldn't do that three or four or five times. And then all of a sudden you really only have eight outfielders instead of 10.
Agreed. You mentioned it, and I'm surprised I didn't put this on the outline, but this is why I'm glad we're having this conversation, is multi-position players. That is a hot button name, like term, especially for draft and holds, to your point, because you said earlier, like, I want to have 10 outfielders and four infielders, but when you draft a guy that's second base outfield, you count them as both. This is why, because they're multi-position, because you have that luxury. Then it gives you a chance. Say you do have, like, I just picked up Brooks Lee in the draft room. Like, I like him. He's nothing outstanding, but the dude's first base, I think second base, third base or something like that. Like, it's, that'll play almost any week somewhere out there. And to your point, now you could probably take a prospect at, say, third base or second base if you really feel like you have to. Yeah, like, it's not an elite, but you could. What's your approach to the multi-position guys? Because some people move them up your draft, their draft boards. How do you, are you more aggressive on them, I guess is what I'm asking, or is it more just like a team fit at the same time?
To me, it's definitely a tiebreaker. And I'll look. And so I'm right now in the draft we're in, I have two first basemen, two second basemen, two shortstops, two third base. I usually am not that, like, I have to have the same number, but that to me is then, because I looked at Brooks Lee just in this last round when you took him, and I was like, oh, that would help free up, because I'm not feeling great about my speed. Like, I could maybe take some more. If I took somebody who covers three positions, maybe that means I can take a shot on an outfielder that if he gets some playing time could steal me 15 bags. And so I definitely look at it. I don't feel like I have to leave a draft with a multi-position eligibility player, but like I just took Brendan Donovan. He will be my second baseman, but it doesn't hurt that if my other second baseman hit, I can put him in the outfield. And so that to me is a plus. And I would, the more flexibility I have at each position, I mean, just doing the math, you can't have, it's tough for me to have four catchers, four infielders at each position and 10 outfielders. You're not going to have enough pitching for me. At least I won't have enough pitching. And so if I can get creative and multi, so a lot of times I'll have, oh, what I try to look at is I want seven middle infielders and seven corners. Yep. Like if I'm, it doesn't have to be four shortstops and four second basemen, but if I can have the people that I'm primarily plugging in will be seven of those middle infielders. And then I might have, oh, I've got this other guy like Brendan Donovan too, or however it works. And it just makes me feel better because it's such a game of attrition over those 6 months. And especially drafting now, how many players are going to come to spring training injured that we didn't know about, pitchers and hitters, or somebody had a surprise surgery that we didn't know about and they're delayed, or they strain their oblique 2 weeks before the season starts and then they're out for 2 months. And I just, it makes me feel better knowing losing one or two players won't sink my draft. Hopefully.
Yeah, I'm fully agree with you there. It's funny because I used to be super hyper-focused on, like, I got to get multi-position guys. Like, I just have to. And it, as I've played more, I haven't. Like, Brooks Lee is the first Brooks Lee share. It literally came down. I'm looking at the players available for the pick. I'm like, wait, this actually fits well in this scenario where it wasn't, like, a focus of mine, like, in years past. Like, I have to go get so-and-so. But it is just a huge thing. So, it's like, your point, like, I don't force the envelope, but it's a nice thing to have. It's a very nice tool to have in the tool chest as you're building things out. I want to ask you just a couple 2026 questions before we I let you enjoy the final parts of your wonderful sunset there. What is some, just give me a couple early takeaways from 2026. Like, I've done like five drafts. You've said you're in 11. So you have the upper hand on this one. What are some takeaways? If it be statistical, positional, just in general from your early drafting?
Corner infield, I don't like it. I don't like first and third base. And I found that I've never seen the catching pool be this deep where there are so many amazing options and you can be, I mean, it took me a little while to draft Shea Langeliers is now a fourth or fifth rounder, but there are so many catch. When I feel comfortable with catching, like I don't push it, but with first and third base, I feel like I don't like it if I don't get J-Ram. Or like you said with Vladito, like I normally would not draft Vladdy or Big Meat Pete. But I look at some of the options. I'm like, oh, this is, I have to have four of these. If I wait, and again, my if my first baseman is Christian Walker, what do the other three look like? And so that's what I have found is outfield thins out just because of the volume that you need. But I look at second base. I'm like, if my first second baseman is Glaber, I like Glaber, but what are the next three? Or like, I need to get three second basemen real fast. If I have Glaber's my first or Christian Walker's my first, I need to make sure that I'm pushing up. If there's another first baseman that I like or corner, I need to make sure I get that person, because that's when if Christian Walker has a down year and then you waited until rounds 28 or 30 to get your next ones, you're going to take zeros or I won't be happy with that.
No, I totally get it, because that's, again, I'm glad you picked up on that. That's why one reason I'm taking Vladdy early. It's the average is amazing. Like, I love everything about that. I need average help, but that position is so bad, and you can tell it's so bad if you just look at the ADP. Like, most of the quote unquote decent first basemen go in the top 100 picks. Like, they're getting pushed up because everybody wants them, because they realize the issues at hand. And to your middle infield help point, like second base, I'm finding a lot of guys I don't mind being like my second or third guy if I have to wait. Like, there's a ton of them compared to other positions, to your point. So I'm glad we're on the same page.
Well, and I think with first base, like, I don't feel comfortable with Freddie Freeman right now. I don't know how comfortable, like Matt Olson and Austin Wright. Like, I don't know. In previous years, Freddie Freeman's very steady. And to invest that much draft capital in something uncertain. I mean, and the draft we're in now, I took Nick Kurtz. He could easily have a sophomore slump, and that pick in the early second round is not mid second round is not great. So that's why I also, I'm taking a chance on Nick Kurtz this early. I want to make sure that I have other solid first base options. And so what I'll really do is look and see, with my starters, my the weakest, let's shore that up with volume and depth at that position. And if I have a Lindor and like Dansby Swanson, I'm okay if my third and fourth shortstops are maybe a rookie to take a chance on, because those two guys play every day typically. But if I look and I see, first base is, I've got to really make sure I've got volume and depth for some of those, especially corner. And you can never have enough starting pitching or closers, but that's been my big take. Corner's ugly for me. I don't like it.
Yep, I'm with you, man. It's rough. It's rough out there, but what isn't rough is, folks, you can always go to the NFBC and sign up for more drafts. And if you drive 50s, you'll probably find Ryan in those rooms, and it's a lot of fun. But, man, this was great. I enjoyed chatting with you. A lot of fun. Glad we were able to work this out, because you have an amazing vacation you're on right now. So thanks for filling me in, and we'll have to chat again sometime.
Thank you. My pleasure. And please, everybody, if you've not signed up for an NFBC 50, please do. It's so much fun. I guarantee you'll be hooked, like all of us are, once, if you just give it a shot.
Yep. It's an absolute blast. A lot of good people in there. And it's a lot more relaxing than those DCs, where the last like 15 rounds feel like torture at times. But you can get through the 50s. But we'll wrap it up there. Again, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for joining me, Ryan. But we will be back with you guys next week with some more draft and hold strategy talk and whatnot. But for now, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 793. Catch y'all later.